The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your home for NPR News since 1985, and this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, November 5th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later today on the show, examining how yesterday's announcement from U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions regarding marijuana may or may not affect legal medical marijuana coming in Arkansas. And the Reeves Brothers channel country music from more than a generation ago inside our Furman Garner Performance Studio. Before any of that, we welcome Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics back to Ozarks at Large. He joins us from his office in Fort Smith. Happy New Year, Michael.
Well, Happy New Year, and I'm stirred up anyway on days because of the break. But did you say November 5th or January 5th?
Did I say November?
I'm getting old, Kyle. My ears may have heard November.
My goodness, I just looked at my script, and I did say November. It is not November, ladies and gentlemen. It is January 5th. I don't know where that came from. Good ear.
You're just hoping for the midterms to get here, midterm elections to get here. You're trying to push it.
Yes, because we won't hear anything about them between now and November. My goodness.
No, completely quiet.
Well, let's talk about something that we discovered in December 2017, the final results of building permit numbers for Fort Smith. At times during 2017, you and I talked about how it was going slowly. It ends up, it kind of looked like previous years.
Yes, it came through. We look at permit activity for Fort Smith, for Van Buren, and Greenwood. Obviously, Fort Smith is a bulk, the biggest bulk of those collections, but as you noted, for the first half of the year, it was not looking good for the home team, as they say. Very slow activity, low number of permits, and low permit value. But in the back half of the year, it really came on. And the activity was, for example, in July, building permit values in the three cities, combined in the three cities, was down more than 10%. But it ended the year down less than a percent. It was 0.24% off. And so the region had $210.8 million in permit values in 2017, and it was against $211.3 million in 2016. So it came on strong. And a big reason for that, and this is kind of backward, Kyle, usually it's the when the permit values are up overall for the combined cities, it's often Fort Smith that had the good numbers, but Van Buren and Greenwood helped the region pull ahead. Van Buren had just short of $20 million in permit values, which was over $5 million more than last year. And Greenwood also had $15 million, and that was also $5 million more than last year. So the overall gain, when you look at the overall gain, it was from those two cities. Fort Smith was off, had 169, just right at 170 million in building permits for the year. That's compared to 186 million last year. But again, it's a good reflection of the economy. Now, obviously, we will see if what's happened with national federal, with federal tax policy, with interest rates. Maybe more interest rate hikes in the year. We'll see if this trend where the back half of the year was positive will continue into the first half of 2018.
Well, if there's any indication about 2018, you can look to Phoenix Avenue where, my goodness, ice cream, pizza, sushi, and tacos will soon be served. Yeah. A lot of activity.
Yeah. Yeah, this is that. That's one strip of Phoenix Avenue I may just never leave. Tacos for Life, I think, Kyle, we're going to change our name to Talk Business and Restaurants because that has driven a lot of traffic for our website, and that includes Station Cafe there in downtown Bentonville, which we'll talk about later. But you know, along the 4,000 to 5,500 block of Phoenix Avenue, you'll have the Tacos for Life. You'll have a Sumo Steakhouse, Gasano's Pizza, Baskin Robbins, also a Mattress Firm. And that's all next to a liquor store. I mean, what else do you need? You got tacos and Asian food, pizza. Then you can go get some ice cream. Then you run over to the Mattress Firm to take a break. And then you got liquor. I mean, that's like, I don't know what millennials need, but if that's not it, then I don't know what they need.
You may want to check out how Mattress Firm works. I'm not sure you have a clear idea of how their business model goes. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, if they're going to be in the mix of all those companies, they may want to consider their business model change just for that store, because I could, 15 bucks an hour just to borrow a mattress, that could work.
But good news for Phoenix Avenue and Fort Smith, right?
Yeah, that's all just all kind of hit at once through permits. And that part of Phoenix Avenue is just, there's been no development on it for a long time. I mean, you had that complex, the mall complex there just west of it. And then you had a lot of the development on the east end of Phoenix Avenue. And that's kind of been the redheaded stepchild of the avenue, but man, it blew up all of a sudden in the last few months. And most of these facilities, these new restaurants and retail outlets, are expected to open in the year. So we'll be staying on top of it.
Well, you mentioned how news about restaurants generates traffic at the talkbusiness.net site. I was just looking at the item that was put up about the Station Cafe in downtown Bentonville having to move from its location for the past 20 years. Already 37 shares in just a few hours of publication. We do love our restaurant news.
Yeah, getting close to 12,000 views, which it's interesting. But the Station Cafe, I don't know if any, I'm sure a lot of your folks in Northwest Arkansas are familiar with it. I'm familiar with it. It's an icon of the square. It's been there since 1977. I knew it'd been there a while, but not that long. But the building has been purchased, and the new owner has pretty much told the tenants, you need to be out by April 28th. We've been told by the manager, Misty Ward, the restaurant manager, that they're not just going to close the business down. They're going to try to find a location nearby or somewhere and reopen. But this is something, I don't want to say it's troubling, because there's a lot of positive development in Northwest Arkansas. But one of the things we're hearing in these downtown renovations, it's all positive. You bring people in, you bring new owners in, they renovate the facility, but then the rents start to rise, which is a natural market function. And some of the people that have been there, that have weathered the storm all these years through, you know, the bad times, they essentially can't afford to stay during the good times. So that's something we're going to kind of watch in terms of, is it a trend? Is it just one-offs in terms of that kind of market dynamic or what? But Station, I mean, that's a great place to sit outside in the little off the sidewalk tables and just people watch. So I hate to see that go away.
You mentioned it's been there since 1977. I think it was the filling station when it first opened under its first owners. The
right.
Square in Bentonville in 1977 did not look like the square looks like in 2018.
Oh, no. In fact, the square in Bentonville is about all there was in Bentonville, I think, in 77. But, yeah, I don't want your listeners to think I'm being negative in any way. I think it's amazing what's going on up there. But sometimes there are some interesting impacts, and we're just going to watch those.
Ebb and flow, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I tell you what, on Monday's show, can we talk about what y'all thought were the 10 top stories about Fort Smith?
Sure. I mean, if it's November still, I don't know, but we'll try.
Very good. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about restaurants and so much more that affects your life at talkbusiness.net. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, Kyle.
In the novel Red Sky at Noon, we see Joseph Stalin and wonder, how can a brutal dictator be such a tender father?
If we turn them into absolute Frankenstein-like monsters, we learn nothing and understand nothing about how they come to power and how they operate.
Simon Sebag Montefiore on his new Western set on the Eastern Front, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced yesterday he's rescinding an Obama-era protection for states like Arkansas with legal marijuana programs. Arkansas Public Media's Bobby Ampazon spoke with Bud Cummins, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Arkansas under President George W. Bush in 2001. Bobby asked Cummins if the attorney general's move yesterday is unusual, or even if the Cole memorandum itself was radical.
Memos like this are not unique just to this particular area. We've had, you know, the Thompson memo after the Enron-type scandals involving corporations. You know, there's policy that's handed down in the department from time to time that just tries to give guidance to the prosecutors. A lot of it's just to bring consistency as the prosecutors in different districts exercise their discretion. They want it to come out roughly the same and not have extreme cases on each end.
And in fact, at least as it's being reported, rescinding the Cole memorandum is not new and radically different direction. It's simply this attorney general saying enforcement of federal law will be up to the individual prosecutors. Because isn't it true that individual prosecutors are making decisions every day about which cases, you know, to go after very intensely and which ones to maybe back off a little bit?
No question about it. And you know, prosecutors before the Cole memo were not taking federal prosecutions against people for possession of marijuana or small things on the smaller end of the scale. They were going to pay more attention if sale to minors, crossing state lines, funding gang activity, things like that. And I imagine that that'll be roughly the standard going forward. And in fact, that was the standard under the Cole memo tried to carve out, was that they should continue to prioritize those situations.
But nonetheless, for entrepreneurs, people in the private world, attorneys and lawyers, this is a pretty significant jolt. It might cause some folks to decide it's just too risky. Isn't that true?
I think it will cause problems in the business model, particularly, you know, for the financial systems, the banks. Money has to go through the financial system, and banks are highly regulated, and the Cole memo gave them some comfort that they were not going to get crossways with federal law enforcement if they did business with these marijuana companies. I think probably this action will cause them to worry a lot about whether they want to continue to do business in these areas.
If you yourself were sitting in the prosecutor's office, how would you interpret the direction that Attorney General Sessions has given you as the prosecuting attorney?
I don't want to be too critical. I'm pretty critical of the Obama DOJ for a number of reasons, but I don't want to be too critical of them on this particular point. The criminalization of drugs across the board, and particularly with marijuana, has been, a problem and probably inadequately debated and dealt with by legislators for years. And so it creates a lot of conundrums for law enforcement. I think they were trying to do something that would be common sense and in their view and allow these states that wanted to legalize medical marijuana or the personal use of marijuana to go forward. And so I think maybe their intentions were good. I read this as the Attorney General saying, that's pretty complicated and that's not our job. Our job is to enforce the laws. Let's take all this complexity out of it. Go back, use prosecutorial discretion like you always have. We don't want you bringing a federal indictment against somebody for having a baggie of marijuana in their car, but go prosecute the cases that need to be prosecuted. And if the Congress wants to change the law, let them change it. And that's really the proper way to address it. Politicians have not really been excited about publicly debating decriminalization of drugs. It's just a lot easier at election time to say you're tough on drugs and you want to put the bad guys in prison. But if you look at the statistics, it's not really helping the drug problem that much.
So you favor Sessions' move here?
I think it's probably the right move. I think he's probably a pretty conservative guy. And you know, I don't smoke marijuana. I don't think he smokes marijuana, and he probably doesn't like it. But I think he's just saying, look, you know, that's unnecessary complexity to inject into the executive branch that's trying to enforce laws. I'm going to tell my guys to go out and gals to go out and just enforce the laws. And if Congress wants to provide protection to these state activities, they can do that.
Bud Cummins is the former prosecuting attorney for the Eastern District of Arkansas. Bud, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Have a good day. Thank you.
Bobby Ampazon with Arkansas Public Media spoke with Bud Cummins, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Arkansas under President George W. Bush, yesterday about the announcement by U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions regarding marijuana. Late yesterday, both of Arkansas's current U.S. attorneys responded to requests for comment. Eastern District Prosecutor Cody Hyland's office says it will continue to exercise discretion and evaluate criminal cases on individual basis. Western District Prosecutor Kenneth Elzer's spokesman referred all inquiries to the U.S. Department of Justice. It's a common sight this time of year. Withered Christmas trees tossed curbside next to trash bins. Many end up landfilled, though more municipalities recycle live holiday trees into mulch. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, there's still yet another option.
Goats!
That's right, goats. 20 goats run to Jason Estes from a back pasture on his family's farm in northeast Fayetteville. The herd surrounds us, curiously nudging and nibbling jackets, strings, pants, even a microphone cord. Soon, they spot a fresh blue spruce Christmas tree recently delivered over the fence for their enjoyment. Turns out goats relish juicy pine needles and tender branches.
So they will totally destroy a tree, down to chew it on the bark, really.
Jason Estes and his spouse, Connie, operate Greedy Goats, hiring out the herd during the warm season to clear brush and invasive vines and shrubs from both private and public property in places like Wilson Park in downtown Fayetteville summer before last. Along with ivy, bush honeysuckle, and privet, they love to eat the gnarliest of invasive plants like poison ivy and thistles. Estes describes his goats as the original brush hog.
See that fence over there? See how you can see the neighbor's house? When I moved in, you couldn't see that. That was a solid wall of privet. And over the last 4 or 5 years, they've eaten it completely down.
The most commonly sold Christmas trees are Norway spruce, Fraser fir, Douglas fir, and blue spruce. But goats apparently have Christmas tree preferences when it comes to snacks.
It seems like they like the spruce the most. That's the ones I see them, you know, kind of aggressively eat. But they'll eat any of them. At this time of year, you know, browse is real thin. There's not a lot of leaves to be had. And they'll happily eat any kind of evergreen they get a chance to.
The goats take turns, he says, in cliques, devouring the trees.
And there's always a little bit of budding here and there. And it can look kind of fierce, but really, honestly, it's just brothers and sisters kind of knocking each other around. It's never really anything more aggressive than a single hit.
I see feed bins out here. What do you typically feed them?
Well, in the winter, we give them oats and goat mineral to keep them healthy, but their primary food through the winter is hay. So this the Christmas trees act as a treat.
The herd is relatively new, acquired after purchasing the property, a former goat dairy, and a flock of chickens.
And then they're like a gateway drug to animals, so ended up with the goats. And then, you know, they're prolific. They reproduce pretty quickly. 3 goats turns into 12 goats really fast. And then once we started doing the business, we opened up our options to doing some rescue goats. And that's what filled out the rest of their herd.
This herd is a blend of breeds.
Most of them are Boer Nubian mixes, which is what this guy right here is. And we have some pure breeds. He's a pure breed Nubian. We have a couple of Nigerian dwarfs, these little troublemakers over here. And those 2 little troublemakers over there. And then this is our newest addition to the herd. Her and her sister, this is Persimmon and Jasmine, and they're Kiko goats, which is a breed just coming to Arkansas, originally from New Zealand. So I have African goats, I have New Zealand goats, but they're all Arkansas goats. They're all from around.
These goats are cute. They're plump. They have thick winter pelts during cold snaps. However, they are provided lots of warm straw and heat lamps. Pampered, greedy goats.
Now, we have occasionally put sweaters on goats, too.
Not so far-fetched if you think about equine winter coats placed on horses by thoughtful owners. These goats are also party animals, several mini-goats, as well as younger goats with adorable names like Biscotti, Oreo, Snickerdoodle, and Nutter Butter are caravaned to special events for petting and brushing by both kids and grown-ups. They love attention.
Yeah, we did a party last Friday. We went to a family's home, and they all came out and had they were all in town for Christmas, so they decided to have some goats over to play with. It was pretty entertaining.
Greedy goats are apparently working year-round now. You can see for yourself by visiting them on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Support for 91.3 comes from Woodstone Craft Pizza and Bar on South School in Fayetteville, open Tuesday through Sunday. Woodstone offers wood-fired artisan pizza, salads, fork and finger foods, plus locally brewed and seasonal beers. New uptown location opening soon. WoodstoneCraftPizza.com for more.
And ahead on today's show, Richard III is on stage this weekend. It's the latest production from the Crude Mechanicals. Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette offers a preview to the play and a preview to the entire season for the Fort Smith Little Theater. That season doesn't include Shakespeare, but there will be zombies. That conversation ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
On the next How I Built This, a hair salon called Dry Bar that successfully franchised the blowout. And we're not talking about tires.
I was like, you know, maybe I should start a mobile blow-dry business.
Huh.
And on Planet Money, we discover what happens when a bunch of smart people figure out a better way to get food to the hungry people who need it. That's Planet Money.
Followed by How I Built This from NPR.
Planet Money and How I Built This every Sunday evening at 7 on 91.3. You can see a full weekend schedule of our programming at KUAF.com. As Children's Northwest gets closer to opening, more announcements of gifts for the hospital in Springdale are being made. Businessman Sam Mathias is giving $700,000 toward the construction of the hospital. The capital campaign to raise $70 million for the construction and opening of Children's Northwest is now near $68 million raised. On Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large, we plan to have a preview tour of the hospital, which is scheduled to open early this year. Governor Asa Hutchinson says the state has trimmed about 10% of the people on Arkansas Medicaid rolls. The governor says there are just over 931,000 people enrolled in Medicaid programs in the state, representing a reduction of about 117,000 enrollees compared to last year.
I'm pleased to say that we are on target to meet the savings goal that I outlined to the healthcare task force. In addition, because of what's happened, because of the reduced numbers that I outlined, DHS is now projecting that it will spend roughly $500 million less on Medicaid in FY19 than was anticipated last year, having to be spent on our Medicaid program.
Arkansas still has not received approval from the federal government for changes proposed for the state's hybrid Medicaid expansion program, but the governor says based on recent conversations, he's confident that will happen. Cindy Gillespie, director of the Department of Human Services, says the changes are in line with what President Trump's administration is supporting.
We are one of eight states that have a request in for a work requirement. And so as each of the states has continued to add, this has become a major area of focus. So, yeah, we're feeling very good about all of us getting our waivers.
A pair of vacancies in the state Senate has created uncertainty about whether there will be enough votes to continue the Medicaid expansion when the legislature convenes next month.
Hello, this is Rick Stockdale. Remember, your public radio station is your daily companion and most trusted source for essential news every day. Also, 91.3 is listener-supported and can't continue without the support of listeners like you. Vital funds needed to pay for the high-quality journalism and public radio programs you and so many rely on. You can support the station you rely on, and it's tax-deductible. Donate today online at supportkuaf.com. And thanks.
It is Friday, January 5th, 2018. Oh, I almost made it. I almost made the mistake there, Becca. Here for her first visit in the new year is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Did you have a lovely break?
I did.
The Crude Mechanicals are home for Christmas.
Yes.
This is a theater troupe that's made up of young people who have gone to school here, have gone off to school mostly, and when they're home at Christmas, gee, they just have to find something to do.
And Crude Mechanicals, the name of their troupe, is taken from a group in a Shakespearean play.
Exactly. So they do Shakespeare. And this year they're doing a little light, frothy something called Richard III.
Which I have actually read in the past few years.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
And if you see the, 1950s version, it's kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the premise. Richard of Gloucester, who is basically a psychopath.
Right.
Right?
Right, yes, yes.
Wants to, having killed the Prince of Wales, woo his widow, convince King Edward IV that his friends and courtiers are treacherous, and remove any barriers to putting the crown on his own head, whether it takes murder or lies or whatever. And he breaks the fourth wall and lies straight to the audience, which is great.
He's an auspicious kind of character.
He is. And he is beautifully played by a gentleman named Charlie Rodriguez, who's in the MFA program in acting at the University of Arkansas, who wanted to do this for his thesis. And he and the Crude Mechanicals got together and said, why, let us do Richard III. So what do you do with a 3.5-hour play?
Condense it?
Yes.
Yeah.
By taking chunks of it that are essentially telling you the news of who's dead, who's done whatever, and turning them into newscasts.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
They're doing contemporary clothing, period language, and these newscasts. And I think it's going to be way fun. Now, any resemblance to any national or international figure is purely coincidental. But Zach Stoltz, who is one of the founders of Crude Mechanicals, says, Shakespeare was writing this warning to us 400 years ago, and look where we are.
Certainly in interesting times.
This happens, yes. And, you know, the old Asian curse. I mean, you live in interesting times. The show is at 7:30 today, tomorrow, and Sunday. That's all there is.
Mm-hmm.
At the Arkansas Union Ballroom on the University of Arkansas campus, admission is free. And you can find out more by emailing crudemechanicals@gmail.com.
They also have a Facebook page.
It's also that time of year to announce the Fort Smith Little Theater season.
Right. They're the ones who go by calendar years.
They're the only ones, as far as I know, that don't do school years. They do calendar years.
For me, it's easier. I think of years in January 1 to December 31.
Oh, I think of them in school years.
Okay.
But I appreciate this because in January, we're always looking for news.
Mm-hmm.
And they are celebrating their 70-somethingth year. They start the season in February with The Little Foxes.
Mm-hmm.
Great drama. Avaricious Southern family. April, they're doing Calendar Girls, which was a movie. This is based on the story of 11 mature British women who want to raise money to fight leukemia by posing for a nude calendar. They assure me there will be no nudity on stage. At the end of May, they're doing The Fox on the Fairway, which is a Ken Ludwig comedy I know nothing about.
And Ken Ludwig is known best for?
Best known for Lend Me a Tenor, which we've seen done around here many times. This one is about how far arch rivals will go to win the annual club golf tournament.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Then middle of July through August 4th, My Fair Lady. You all know that one. September, Night of the Living Dead. And then in November, one of my top three plays, period, Noises Off, which
timing.
I love.
Right, you got that timing.
Building a set that revolves or figuring out, say, I love the show. And then they have three off-season shows, Mythical Creatures and How to Approach Them, Bell Star by Herself.
Very appropriate for the bicentennial year
in
celebrations.
Fort Smith, and the Wackiest, Tackiest Christmas.
Okay.
And you can find out more at fslt.org. Tomorrow is the King's Day kickoff, starting the Eureka Mardi Gras season at 5 o'clock at the Rowdy Beaver in Eureka Springs. You can meet the Royal Court. Tomorrow night, Candy Lee is performing. I love her stuff.
I
She's at the Odd Soul in Springdale at 8 o'clock. Sunday, there's a was a book talk scheduled with Zeke Taylor at the Artist Retreat Center in Bella Vista. It has been canceled.
Oh.
So if you go there, you will not find Zeke. But on Monday, you can go to an artist reception for Reese Abbott at 5 o'clock at the Springdale Public Library, because they have a gallery, if you didn't know.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, that's a good lineup. Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team played one of the highest-ranked teams in Division I in the country last night. Number 3 Mississippi State defeated Arkansas 111-69 in Starkville to give Arkansas its first conference loss of the season. Arkansas will host Alabama Sunday afternoon at 3 in Bud Walton Arena. The John Brown University women pulled off an upset of number 5 Wayland Baptist University last night in Siloam Springs, 72-64. The JBU women, ranked 19th, will meet Oklahoma Panhandle State Saturday afternoon at 1 in Bill George Arena. The JBU men also won last night, defeating 21st-ranked Wayland by 18 points. They host Oklahoma Panhandle Saturday at 3. And the UAFS basketball teams split games last night at Oklahoma Christian. The women won by 25. The men lost by 4. The UAFS teams will host Newman University for a doubleheader Saturday in Fort Smith, beginning at 1.
On this week's On the Media, a woman's right to an abortion is enshrined in law. So why are we still discussing it?
These issues have been shaped by people with nakedly self-serving partisan interests. The political intensity of it, that's an artifice.
The overheated rhetoric of the abortion debate on the next On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large for the first Friday in 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Katie Hendrickson, host of Note with Katie Hendrickson. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And I bring up New Year, not just because it's seasonally correct, but because you did something on New Year's. I want to hear about it.
Yes. We had the second annual Trillium Salon Series New Year's Day potluck, and that's in collaboration with Artist Laboratory Theater on South College in Fayetteville. And it's this great event where it's an afternoon, the first day of the year, and, you know, everything's closed, but everyone comes together now with the Trillium Salon Series, and we have a potluck dinner. Well, dinner is not a dinner. Is it dinner at 3 o'clock?
Oh, sure.
I guess it is.
Sure.
Potluck dinner. Anyway, it was a great event in that we're all coming together on the first day of the year, and you're starting off the year with music, live music. So we had so many performers. I actually had a string trio from 3 women who had studied at the University of Arkansas. One is in a master's program somewhere in Stillwater, I think. One of them's in a master's program somewhere else, and one of them is a violinist in Sona, and they played Haydn. I had a violin teacher who played some Bach partitas, and then we had a sing-along session at the end where we sang Amazing Grace. My friend Candace Houston came up to the stage and we started the sing-along. And, you know, when you're in a room and people are like, come on, sing. The performer's like, sing along. And it's like kind of like crickets or something like that. Well, it wasn't. The room just filled up. It just filled up with sound. Everyone was singing and it felt amazing. And it was just such a nice coming together. So that was a great Trillium. And I'm really excited to have that tradition.
January 1, 2019.
Doing another one. Okay. It'll be the third annual for sure.
But there are other Trilliums between then and now.
Yes. Coming up, I'm really excited about this one. February 21st in the Great Hall of Crystal Bridges, Museum of American Art. We are going to explore Florence Price, Arkansas native composer.
Yep.
And we're having performances from Urgene Kong, an ensemble that she's put together. She's actually this month putting out a recording of Florence Price's 2 violin concertos.
Oh, how exciting.
So she's doing that. And so in February, during Black History Month, we're actually having this concert out at the Great Hall. And that's, again, February 21st, 7 p.m. I think that's a Wednesday. And if you do want more information on that, you can go to Crystal Bridges' website, crystalbridges.org.
It is indeed a Wednesday. Just check the calendar. And then later this year, Fort Smith Symphony will have a world premiere of a Florence Price.
Yes, yes.
That's never
been heard. We're having a big, it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's a resurgence. I think it's just a discovery of her, because she basically, in her lifetime, although she had a symphony performed by a major symphony orchestra, she died in relative obscurity, and then her archives were found in an attic in Chicago, and these two violin concertos actually were unpublished in her time, in her lifetime, and they've been unearthed because the Mullins Library Archives has the Florence Price Archives, and so now some of her music that had never been performed before is getting known into the world.
Exciting. Very exciting.
Absolutely.
Speaking of music that we can hear, Sunday night,
always a great time for symphonies, in my opinion. You can sit there, let the end of the week end, and think about the week ahead, and I'll just dwell on the symphonies. And there's two of them I've queued up for this week, Bruckner's 7th and Elgar's 2nd. And they're both they're about an hour long each. And so it's pretty much going to be 2 hours of symphonic music. And they'll really heat you up because they're very lively.
Perfect for winter, yes, wouldn't you say?
I think so.
So that's Sunday night at 8 on 91.3. You can get the sneak preview, or not the sneak preview. You can hear it Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF2.
Yes, absolutely. And then we have someone that we know and love in the community, and she's become a really well-known food writer and publisher of cookbooks, Crescent Dragon Wagon. Mm-hmm. She is going to be teaching a class at the Brightwater Culinary Institute on food writing. So I had a chance to speak with her, and I love the intersection between art, writing, food, all those explorations of the senses. So,
and that'll be on sometime this week?
Monday.
Oh, Monday night?
Monday night.
Okay.
For an Arts Beat feature. Excellent. And then, finally, I talked to Sharon Isbin, classical guitarist, multi-Grammy winner, I believe. I wrote down some factoid. She's been a soloist with more than 170 orchestras in her time. Can you believe it?
No. Holy moly.
And she's a teacher at the Aspen Music Festival and Juilliard School. But her latest release, her recording, is a collaboration she's done on art songs, Spanish art songs, and it includes a song cycle from Garcia Lorca, who I wouldn't have thought of as a composer. I mean, I know him as a poet and a playwright. Mm-hmm. So it's very fascinating, and she was wonderful to talk to. So that's coming up this week. I don't know what day yet. I think I'm going to say probably Wednesday.
You know what happens every time I tell someone
it's
probably going to be on Wednesday?
Then it changes.
Yeah. So. But, you know, listen to Of Note 8 to 10 on 91.3 Sunday through Thursday, or 9 to 11 a.m. on KUAF2 Sunday through Thursday, and you'll hear it if you just keep listening.
Absolutely. And you can always connect with me at my Facebook page. That's a really nice resource. You can message me. I'd love to hear from you, and I can let you, anything you found out in this conversation, I'd be happy to explore further with you.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, about a couple hours before we had this conversation, I asked Katie, do you have anything coming up? And you're like, I don't know. And then you come in here with, I'm interviewing this world-renowned food writer, this guitarist, we're having a Trillium, so you're busy.
Brain freeze,
I understand. All right, Katie Hendrickson, host of Note with Katie Hendrickson. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Kyle.
Matt and Cole Reeves first came to our studio in 2013. Since our last visit with them, the two country musicians have moved to Nevada and formed a band together, appropriately titled The Reeves Brothers. In October, they released a new album, King of Country Music. During a visit to Northwest Arkansas this past fall, Matt and Cole came to the Furman Gardner Performance Studio, along with Kelly Bishop, to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. Cole began the conversation by discussing their move out west.
We came out January 8th of 2015 and went back just because we wanted to be around Vegas and the more of a music scene out there for a little while and play some old country music and stuff. And there were some good honky-tonks out there. And we lined up a weekend gig, and we drove out one night and ain't never moved back since.
Now, where in Nevada are you? Are you close to Vegas?
We're 45 minutes from Vegas to an hour. A little town called Pahrump, Nevada, right over the hill west of Vegas.
And you're not completely new to Nevada. You guys spent some time there as kids, right?
Yeah, we grew up out there as kids off and on. My dad was an entertainer, Jack Reeves, and we came out there with him and my mom when we were little kids. And we lived there from the time I guess I would have been 4 years old until the time I was about 12. And Matt was about 8 until the time he was 16 or 17.
Are there a lot of honky-tonks out in Nevada? I guess when I think of Nevada, I think of Las Vegas, and I think of, you know, Britney Spears taking residence in one of the hotels or something. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah. No, there's actually a lot more than you'd think, and it's played in our favor because that's all that people see is the Strip. When they think of Las Vegas, mm-hmm. You know, they don't think of anywhere else. And so you can go a block off the Strip and find a little honky-tonk. And Saddle and Spurs is way over in North Las Vegas. There's a Sand Dollar, an old club. Frank Sinatra used to take his mistresses there back in the 70s. And so it's just a little dive honky-tonk and stuff like that. But there's a pretty good scene out there as far as honky-tonks go.
And do you have a specific bar where you have maybe your own kind of residence where you play every Sunday or something?
Yeah, we play the Hub. Out in Pahrump, and we're there sometimes 3 or 4 times a week just to play. You know, the owner's a good friend of ours, and so if we're not doing anything, we just call him up about an hour before the show and say, hey, we're going to come play tonight, and he's always gracious. So we do that often when we're not doing anything.
Well, how has the band itself changed? And last time you guys were here, you still had a separate band for Cole and a separate band for Matt, and you played together sometimes, and now you guys are playing together all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not just the two of you.
No. Kelly's sitting over there being quiet. We had Nate Wong that was living out here, mm-hmm. and he decided to move to Hong Kong and become a star over there. So he's now like the house drummer for The Voice over there in Hong Kong.
Oh.
And so right now we've got 2 or 3 different drummers out in Vegas that we kind of rotate around with that all know our stuff. And but the three of us, we tour together all the time. It's always us three. So other than that, we got a steel player out there, Steve Gull, and he works on the records with us, and on the big shows he'll play with us and things like that. But not too awful lot has changed.
No,
you know?
Just the location and yeah. The size of the band.
Exactly, yeah.
And the size in more than one ways. Yeah. We put on a couple pounds since the last time we played. But we still have just as much fun.
Perfect.
That's right.
Well, you recently released a new album, King of Country Music, which you brought here for me today. Thank you very much. Got 10 songs on this, and I believe it's a mix of some covers and some originals. How did you pick your covers? I know you guys kind of have a long history with country music.
Yeah, we picked our covers because we go through a lot of old music that friends of our families and stuff that my dad's met through over the years, and we wrote a couple of the songs on it, and then some of the covers are from the Southern California and the California people, and one of the title track, King of Country Music, is from a guy, Gene Price, that played for Merle Haggard. He played bass on the Live from Muskogee, Oklahoma album that was real big for Merle. And he wrote that song, and then there's a couple Donnie Rohr's songs, and he was a guy that had a couple Billboard songs back in the 70s, but never hit it real big. And then we got one called Who Invented Honky Tonkin' that my dad's guitar player, Chuck Willis, his brother wrote it, Ray Willis, and he wrote songs for Ronnie Millsap and Kenny Rogers and was a big-time songwriter in the 70s.
Could we hear one of the songs from your new album?
Absolutely. We'd love to do it.
What are you going to play for me?
Actually, what I'll do, and I'm sorry right now, guys, I'm hoarse, but I'm going to do the best I can. I've been suffering from a cold and traveling and stuff, but I'm going to do a song that our bass player, Kelly Bishop, and I wrote in the garage of our manager, Joe Swopes. We were all sitting around one night and came up with this song over maybe a little bit too much Jim Beam and Jack Daniels and got to thinking about it. We said, we shouldn't be drinking
wait,
no more.
You can't leave out Crown Royal.
Yeah, Crown Royal. That's where the little crown for the King of Country Music came in. Yeah. He got that crown there. We're going to do this song. It's called I Gotta Sober Up to Face the Night. I've drank more than my fair share of whiskey. Been in quite a few of those honky-tonk bars. The hangovers and heartaches fade away, but the memories of you have stayed so long. Now I've got to sober up to face the night. I can't fall asleep with you still on my mind. I'm drunk on all the memories of you here laying by my side. And I've got to sober up to face the night. I know I've drank whiskey every day. Never thought you'd be the one that had to pay. The wreck out on the highway late that night, it sobered me right up, but took your life. Now I've got to sober up to face the night. I can't fall asleep with you still on my mind. I'm drunk on all the memories of you here laying by my side. And I've got to sober up to face the night. It's about time I sobered up. Face the night.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you.
And we should mention to folks, one of the reasons your horse is because you're in town for a show. We're recording this the morning after a show, actually.
Yep.
You guys played at the Meteor Guitar Gallery last night. So you do try to make trips home. How often do you, I say home, because you're still from here, still from there. How often do you try to make it back to Arkansas to play?
We get out here, what, about every 3 months? 2 to 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend lives in Eureka Springs.
Okay, that's a good reason to come here.
Yeah, and so, and then our manager lives here. And so, and we got a lot of friends out here, so it's no big deal. And we like coming out here, and it always works out, I think, that we're ready to leave Vegas when we come out here, and then when we stay out here, we're ready to get back there, and then, back and forth.
So having the two homes works.
It's really nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you can make that work.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, you're making country music work, and there was a post on your Facebook page that I enjoyed reading that someone was saying that you're saving country music. Do you feel that you are saving country music?
We're preserving it.
You're preserving it.
Yeah.
So I think as people can probably tell from that song right there, you have an older sound, I suppose. You sound very much like the honky tonks in the 70s and that style of country. Because
sure.
I believe now people will argue there are different types, different styles of country. Something
Definitely
that you'll
so.
Hear on the radio now isn't necessarily.
Yeah.
So I feel like I hear a lot of debate on this as to where country music is going, if that's where it should be going, or if there should be different styles. Kind of what's your take on country music in that regard?
I think that really everybody has their place if that's what it is. I mean, there's young kids that aren't going to like what we're doing, and there's young kids that aren't going to like what, Luke Bryan's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Luke Bryan's selling a million records, so you can't, and so is Chris Stapleton on the other spectrum of
mm-hmm.
that. So you can't take that away from them, because there was a thing Elvis said years ago that this opera singer came up to him and told him how terrible he was and when he was a kid. And he said, well, how many records did you sell last year? And the guy just walked off mad,
Sure.
And so that's kind of where that goes, Whether it's what we listen to or not, they're still selling records, And that's, like I said, everybody has their place. And like Cole said, we're just trying to preserve an era and write songs like that. You know, instead of none of our songs are really slamming new country like mm-hmm. a lot of these people.
I save that for my free time.
Yeah. A lot of these people write songs doing that, and we just want to write a good country song. So that's kind of where we're at on it.
Well, what is it about that time, that place and time, that you feel it's an important era to preserve?
If you're asking what, like, a favorite era of mine for country music that we focus on is the 70s, early 70s, you know, as a matter of fact, I probably like late 70s and early 80s Merle Haggard more, but we seem to play more early 70s style of country music, I think, and that's just the era that we grew up on, and all our old records and stuff that we listened to as kids were all early 70s Merle Haggard and Waylon and Willie and stuff. So we usually stick with that.
Mm-hmm. There's a kid, or I don't know if he's a kid, he's not a kid, Zephaniah O'Hara, and he kind of does the 60s. He has that, the mid 60s to late 60s wrapped up for his sound. I feel like Whitey Morgan kind of has the outlaw Waylon thing, and what we're doing is kind of right between them, and nobody's focusing on that. And so that's where we're at. It just happens to be that point in time of the early 70s, nobody's really focusing on that, and we love it. So that's how we ended up there, and that's why we do it, because that's just what comes out when we do our thing. So,
well, thanks again for coming in. Could we hear one more song before we let you go?
Sure. Let's do that Ray Willis song, Who Invented Honky Tonkin'. Someone's always leaving, getting in the wind. Someone's always telling me goodbye. If I get over this one, I'll never love again. I found another way to lose my mind. Turn it up and let the music fill a smoky bar room. Give my body something for my mind. Bring a ringing country singing teardrop to my eyes. Who invented honky tonkin' ought to have a prize. Whiskey doesn't taste as good as mom's apple pie, but it has a way of satisfying me. Like a dollar's worth of heaven and a woman's tender lies, I swear there's not a place I'd rather be. Turn it up and let the music fill a smoky bar room. Give my body something for my mind. Bring a ringing country singing teardrop to my eyes. Who invented honky tonkin' ought to have invented honky tonkin' ought to have fun.
Matt and Cole Reeves and Kelly Bishop inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda in the fall. The Reeves Brothers' new album, King of Country Music, is now out. The band is planning to return to Northwest Arkansas for a show sometime next month. You can keep up with that plan as it develops, as well as find out more about the new album at thereevesbrothers.com.
That's John Beasley and his group Monkestra doing a Thelonious Monk tune. Hi, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. This week we'll hear some of my favorites from 2017, including Dave Stryker, Christian McBride, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, and more. Shades of Jazz here on KUAF.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums, back with you Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Thanks for spending part of your Friday with us.